Hello and welcome to episode 23 of Investigating the Post Office Scandal. It's Friday the 25th of November 2022. My name is Rebecca Thompson and I wrote the first investigation into the Post Office Horizon IT scandal for Computer Weekly back in 2009.
Hello, my name is Nick Wallace and I am the author of the book The Great Post Office Scandal, which came out last year but has just been published as an updated paperback. Together, Rebecca and I are covering phase two of Sir Wyn Williams' Post Office Horizon IT public inquiry at the International Dispute Resolution Centre in London.
If you know nothing at all about the Post Office Horizon scandal, you could do a number of things. You could read my original investigation for Computer Weekly, or you could buy Nick's book, or you could just Google it. It's regarded as the most widespread miscarriage of justice in UK legal history.
Coming up in this episode, we've got our first former Secretary of State giving evidence and our first female witness of this phase of the inquiry. Bearing in mind we're now into week seven, I think that says something about the worlds of IT and government in the late 90s. We also discovered that the inquiry has been served a witness statement by former UK Prime Minister Tony Blair, who doesn't appear to remember much detail about what was happening in government over the Horizon project, but finishes his statement by calling Horizon, quote, seriously flawed, leading to tragic and completely unacceptable consequences, whilst offering his deep sympathy with those affected. So this week we started to get a more in-depth picture of the difficult and dysfunctional political relationships that contributed to Horizon's early problems in the late 1990s. Rebecca, you watched Wednesday and Thursday's evidence, didn't you? What jumped out?
So Tony Blair's witness statement was a surprise. He's been mentioned at the inquiry before, but we didn't know he'd actually submitted evidence. As you've said, Blair didn't seem to remember much, but the main point that he seeks to get across relates to the fact that he says that he was not aware there were any questions relating to the reliability of Horizon or Pathways software, and that if he had been, he might not have pushed to find a way forward. As it was, he said that he understood the issues to largely be commercial, and that he received the necessary reassurances on Horizon or Pathways reliability.
And reassurance was a recurring theme, it seems, this week, wasn't it?
Yes, it was. So reassurance and the issue of what ministers were actually told came up again during Stephen Byre's evidence, the former Secretary of State for Trade and Industry. On Thursday the 24th, he talked about being blindsided by various problems with Horizon when the Labour government came to power in 1997. And he said that despite asking civil servants what was going on, he felt that there was a veil that he couldn't lift. He said this policy impacted the government's ability to respond effectively.
One of the great frustrations we had as ministers in the new administration that we were not provided with any detailed information about the difficulties that may have been experienced with Pathway during the tendering process. That was all denied to us. And there is a well-established protocol that members of a new government administration cannot see the documents or the policy papers that were provided to the previous administration. So we were blindsided. And I can understand why, for political reasons, one is not allowed to sort of delve into why particular political decisions were taken. But I cannot see why, if technical weaknesses and problems had been identified under a previous administration, why we couldn't have been alerted to those, and we were not.
That's a convention of our administration of politics.
Yeah. Well, of government, not just...
Yeah, of government. Yeah, yeah. What is your understanding of the limit of it, or the limits of it? What are you denied access to?
Well, on this occasion, everything. I mean, we had four key questions as ministers that we wanted answered about this dysfunctional, fatally flawed contract that was Horizon. We wanted to know who decided it should be a benefit payment card and not a smart card. Why did they arrive at the decision it should be a PFI contract when, in fact, this was a fantastically complicated contract? Was PFI the right approach? We didn't have the details of the tendering process, but I think the inquiry may have sort of delved into that. And finally, why did they end up with basically two clients in the Benefits Agency and POCL whose interests were not aligned. Now, we were denied any of that information as the new administration. As I said earlier, I can understand why we can't delve into the political decisions, the party political decisions, if you like. I can understand why we were not shown the sort of details the inquiries now had about our decision-making process during this period. But I would have thought that if flaws in the system had been identified at an early stage, there's no reason why that couldn't be disclosed to an incoming administration. It would have helped us enormously if, as ministers, we'd been told that these problems had been identified.
And so just testing that at a more general level, are you denied all previous papers of the past administration?
Yes.
And what does all previous papers mean?
From my recollection, when we would inquire from our civil servants, who would have been part of that process, what happened, what was the reasoning behind it, there was a veil that we couldn't lift.
That was Stephen Byers being questioned by Jason Beer. This is a topic that harks back to the Tony Collins blog post that we mentioned in an earlier episode of this podcast.
Yeah, it's fascinating, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah, it is, where he discusses some of the cultural issues in Whitehall that contributed to this scandal. That is on his website, which is called UK Campaign for Change, and it's really worth a read if you're interested in this area.
It is. We've plugged it before, and I think what Byers was saying was an absolute prime illustration of some of the issues that are Tony Collins' speciality. I will put a link to Tony Collins' specific piece in the blurb to this episode.
Obviously, senior people claiming they weren't told key facts is already something of a running theme in this inquiry, and yeah. Byers returned to the issue at the end of his evidence, stating that MPs need actual training in order to be good ministers who are capable of challenging and questioning what they're being told, and describing ministers as sometimes being captured by their department.
And what I don't understand in this whole scandal is how government ministers, given they were being alerted to the problems through adjournment debates, through constituency correspondence, parliamentary questions, how they managed to ignore all of that. And it could well be because they'd almost become captured by their department. And there's a funny relationship, quite often a difficult relationship, between government ministers and their civil servants. And sometimes government ministers, because they're working with those civil servants day in, day out, may reflect the views of the civil servants. What government ministers have got to do is always to challenge and question and disagree where necessary. And so the points I make at the end is whether this may seem inadequate in the circumstances of this, the awful things that have happened to so many people. Ministers need to be trained to be government ministers. You know, we're members of Parliament, but then you move on to a totally different role when you're in government. And part of that, and we were fortunate because although we did it in private, there was a good chance in 1996 that we would form the next government. So we had training what we should be doing as government ministers. And part of that was to listen to advice, yes, of course, but to be ready to challenge and disagree where that was necessary. And it may well be that a more structured approach may be of benefit.
So the word convention relating to that minister-civil servant relationship, particularly when there's a change of government, came up a few times this week, something that the inquiry chair, Sir Wyn Williams, picked Byers up on.
Is this a convention, i.e. that you don't get information about what the previous government has been up to, which operates only if there's a change of government, which includes a change of government of political persuasion?
I'd always assumed so. And given what's happened over recent months, it would be a bit chaotic if the fourth chancellor in 9 months can't be told what the
previous... Right, yes, that's what I would have expected, but I just wanted to be clear about that. But there must be a number of instances, Horizon being one of them, where a project begins under one government, but is obviously intended, or at least might continue, under another.
Yes.
And on the face of it, trying to be objective, I would have thought that knowing what went on about technical aspects relating to a project like Horizon before you become the government might assist in helping you to make decisions after you've become the government.
The officials in the department will have had that information, so they will be aware of it.
Yeah.
They clearly feel constrained to let the new administration know. Now, I can understand, as I was saying to Mr. Beer, I can understand if it's a sort of party political issue, why we wouldn't be told. I think everybody would go along with that. I think if there are technical problems which have been identified within a project like Horizon, then I don't see why we couldn't be told or alerted to the fact that there may be weaknesses, because then we would have constructed something in a way which would have addressed them.
Right. But as a matter of fact, in this instance, you weren't told, I think, is your evidence, yeah?
That's correct, yeah.
Yeah. Now, in this particular instance, there's a variation that I wanted you to consider, and that is that one of the parties to the contract, which was concluded in 1996, was a statutory corporation, namely the Post Office. So what would be preventing, and I'm not saying this in any critical sense, I'm just trying to understand it, what would prevent an incoming relevant minister from simply asking the Post Office what went on?
That's a very good question. I'm afraid I don't have the answer.
Because, as you'll understand, I have to try and make sense of governance issues.
Good luck with that one, yes.
Yeah.
Flora Page, one of the barristers representing some postmasters, then asked Stephen Byers about the quality of the Post Office's management team. Byers suggested that the government did not have full confidence in the board at the time.
You took the view, and perhaps others in government did as well, that Post Office management was in need of some refreshment, shall we say.
You've been very diplomatic. The Post Office at the time, and it may still be the case, faced huge challenges. I mean, it was a world that was moving and developing dramatically with new technology. And I think we had reservations about the ability of the board to deliver.
One issue he went on to explain was the lack of a voice or advocate for some postmasters.
If I remember correctly, I think we did insist that they made an appointment of a non-executive board member who had retail experience.
And your hope from that, from what we get here, is that that person would be an advocate on the board for the network and for sub-postmasters?
Because of the retail element, that they'd have retail experience, yeah.
And did that reflect at that stage a concern that the board was not really listening to the network, was not really listening to sub-postmasters as they should have been?
I think that's the clear implication of what I'm saying.
That was Stephen Byers being questioned by Flora Page.
It was fascinating hearing from a senior minister, a very serious senior person, giving evidence to the inquiry. And I had a quick look through his evidence earlier this week. I think you, Rebecca, picked out all the key points, especially that last one about sub-postmasters' voices. Though it was telling that Byers said that he didn't get any seriously negative feedback about Horizon when he did speak to sub-postmasters, either through his regular meetings with the NFSP or from some of the sub-postmasters he dealt with in his constituency, which, of course, are two sort of slightly self-selecting groups, so they're not going to be necessarily the ones that are going to raise their voices, especially the NFSP, who as an organisation had a vested interest on behalf of its members in selling Horizon to other clients.
Yeah, and I guess not everyone thinks to contact their MP when something like this happens to them. I guess not every postmaster did. And it, certainly back then, it was hard to get postmasters to talk to me. I mean, obviously that was 2009 and I was the media, so of course they...
I think it's tied into this situation whereby some sub-postmasters didn't want to talk because, of course, they didn't want to devalue their own businesses, and Horizon was such a key part of their businesses. And, I wonder whether the inquiry will ever look into that as to whether that... It's almost a conflict of interest, isn't it? It's certainly a conflict of interest that the NFSP dealt with by throwing sub postmasters who were having difficulties under a bus. But I wonder whether it will sort of properly get explored with individual sub postmasters later on in this inquiry.
Maybe, yeah. I think there was a lot of fear about
Fear is certainly something that I came across in the early days of covering this story as well. So it wasn't just civil servants who were accused of keeping information under their hats this week, was it?
No. So during the evidence of David Sibbick, who was a former civil servant at the Department of Trade and Industry, we heard part of the minutes of a 1999 meeting of the National Federation of Sub-Postmasters.
Shall I read out these minutes?
Yes, please do.
Okay. This is from the minutes of a 1999 meeting of the National Federation of Sub-Postmasters, and I'll do it in my best meeting minutes voice. There was a general discussion on the severe difficulties being experienced by sub-postmasters who are already running an automated system. 7 sheets of comments from the Northeast had been passed to Mr. Dave Miller. The difficulties and trauma being experienced by some sub-postmasters were giving rise to concerns for their health and emotional well-being. It was felt by some that a tragedy was not far away if something was not altered soon. And we've heard that report before, haven't we? That's come up earlier.
We have.
In the inquiry.
Yeah.
And who was Dave Miller? He was the programme manager for the post office.
Programme
director for the post office,
That was all the way back in 1999. Sibbick was asked if the former NFSP General Secretary, John Peabody, who will be giving evidence in a couple of weeks, had raised these concerns with him.
I don't think that we... I'm not saying he was trying to hide anything or not say that there weren't problems, but I don't ever remember getting from anyone anything with the flavour of those earlier paragraphs, which are really at the beginning of something that you're now going to multiply by 100 and 1,000 and 10,000 and so on, and just leave it.
And you've said that the Horizon Working Group 1999 was the forum to raise those kinds of issues.
It was a forum to raise these sort of things. Obviously not the only one. Obviously, if you've got a problem, you report it to your supervisor or you report it to a help desk or whatever. But this was certainly a channel for feeding back those kinds of discoveries, if you like, these reactions. And it was the one channel, I would have said, that has direct access to a minister.
And Julian Blake asked Sibbick a bit more about what the working group was told.
It should have come out, in my view, much more starkly at the meeting of that working group than it did. I don't recall, and I don't think the minutes really bring out, that anything that was put to the group in quite those stark terms. I don't know, maybe I'm misremembering, but I don't recall that. I know things were raised, and yes, we're going to talk to the post office about it and so on. Nothing like, this is awful. If this isn't resolved, this is an absolute showstopper. You know, we can't roll the thing out like this to all those poor sub-postmasters and sub-postmistresses around the country and have them having nervous breakdowns and what have you because they can't make the system work.
And who should have been shouting that message?
Well, the representatives in particular of the National Federation of sub-postmasters. I'm not saying they weren't doing their job. They must answer for themselves. I knew them very well, and they were good people. But they too needed to see the system rolled out and working. And I guess they thought, well, we don't necessarily want to start ringing alarm bells too loudly in case it generates pressure to stop the project or whatever it is. You know, these are concerns. They must be raised with the post office. They must be sorted. But let's not overreact. Let's not frighten everybody.
That was David Civic being questioned by Julian Blake.
So, Rebecca, who else did you see giving evidence this week?
So we had our first female witness in this entire phase of the inquiry, Dr. Sarah Graham, a former civil servant at the Department of Social Security, who was brought in to lead a review of benefit payments for the department amid concerns about the Horizon or Pathways project viability. So she was asked about the benefit agency's main concerns about the project, which largely related to lateness, underperformance and budget overruns. And here, one of the inquiry barristers, Catriona Hodge, asked Dr. Graham why she had felt in 1998 that the project should be cancelled.
You've described cancellation in your statement as the logical course. Can you please explain why you regarded it at the time as the logical course?
Well, from memory, the cancellation... from our perspective, the cancellation of the project, it wasn't working. It wasn't being delivered to time. ICL Pathway were in breach, and I believe it was not impossible to conceive of other ways in which the post office, ourselves, government, could achieve our objectives. I think, we shouldn't altogether forget that there were some other objectives apart from strictly the benefit of payment of benefits.
Dr. Graham's evidence also gave us a sense of the significant tension between the benefits agency and ICL. Here, Catriona Hodge is reading from a note that she wrote in 1998.
You state there, apart from the well-documented and continuing delays, ICL have dragged their feet every step of the way, always looking to do less rather than more. For example, constant arguments about the security requirements for the benefit payment card have only recently been resolved, although these were central to the department's business and policy objectives for undertaking the project at all. There is no evidence that ICL is making efforts to keep to continued milestones since they were placed in breach of contract by both parties last November. For example, the October 1998 milestone for the software required to delay operational trial, 11 months late, was not met. The whole tenor of the discussions around the negotiations with Graham Corbett was to make life much easier for ICL than the current contract. Easing requirements, cutting corners, etc. And this is further reflected in spades in the latest 9th of November proposals from ICL. This cannot bode well for the future. Either the project is in the end going to cost much more than is envisaged to get the quality and timely product we need, or just as likely, it will not be delivered on time or in totality, or most likely of all, a mixture of both. We can see you here expressing yourself in what you've described as forthright terms. Why did you consider it necessary to do so at this stage in November 1998?
I think it's quite difficult to recall in a way that would be helpful to this inquiry the exact sequence of events. But reading that, I would judge that I clearly felt that the way the discussions were going were disregarding the key factors that I had put here in this document.
That was Sarah Graham being questioned by Catriona Hodge. Nick, you listened in on Friday this week. Who did we hear from?
Well, I'll be honest with you, today was deathly. It really was. I'm not sure we learned much that we didn't know already. I mean, the inquiry was finished by 1:30 because I think everyone had had enough. There was an industry big beast in the form of Sir Adrian Montagu, who specialised in advising firms on how to finance big projects. He'd worked on the Channel Tunnel and for various large banks in the past. And he'd been brought into the government task force in 1997 to advise on PFI projects. And he was given the Horizon Pathway basket case to deal with. He wasn't involved in the procurement phase of the project, because obviously he came in after that had been completed. But he did say he thought it was deeply flawed. And just in case you're new to all this, when Sir Adrian says POCL, he means the Post Office or Post Office Counters Limited, as it then was. And the Benefits Agency, who he mentions, was still involved in the Horizon Pathway project in those days.
I think it had been badly negotiated, if I'm honest. We had seen in the task force a number of IT procurements. They are among the most difficult of the PFI projects because they require a very crisp and complete definition of the sponsor's requirements. PFI, after all, is supposed to concentrate on outputs and outcomes rather than anything very specific in terms of technical specification. But the contractor in this project has to understand precisely what the software is, the hardware and the software is this is trying to connect to. So ICL would have needed a very precise understanding both of the benefit agency systems and of POCL systems. And because the balance of commercial advantage switches from the procurer to the contractor once the contract is signed, it behoves the procuring authorities to be absolutely specific and categoric in what they're seeking from the contractor. And we know that there were big gaps in some of the contractual documentation. So acceptance testing, model testing, none of these things were specified in detail. And so, almost the two procuring authorities went into this contract with their hands tied behind their backs. There were big gaps, which made it very difficult to control ICL and to push the contract to an easy completion. I'm not sure it would ever have an easy completion, but it was a very difficult commercial situation.
And you say badly negotiated. Who by?
Well, by the procuring authorities. They initiated the procurement. It was their requirements that the contractor was responding to. When you go into a procurement like this, as I say, your requirements need to be very, very specific, because that way the contractor knows what he's going to have to deliver and you've got a decent chance of holding him to account. If a lot is left undefined, it's much, much more difficult.
Questions being put there by the inquiry barrister Julian Blake. Montague also had this to say about his dealings with Fujitsu ICL.
The impression I had at the time was of an organisation, frankly, struggling, I think, to see its way through technical solutions. Commercially an adept organisation, presentations they made to government were quite slick. But overall, they were competent people, but I think they were being let down by, again, their organisation of the project.
And are you talking about a managerial level, below the managerial level, any particular...
It's really only the managerial level I had contact with.
Yes.
And board members of ICL.
Sir Adrian Montague. Now, before we heard from him, a career civil servant called Vincent Gaskell gave evidence this Friday morning. He didn't actually have any direct involvement in the Horizon project, so what he had to say was of limited value, but I sat through it nonetheless. In 1997, Mr. Gaskell worked on the Benefits Agency's CAPS project, its customer accounting and payment system, which was originally going to have to interface with Horizon. Limiting fraud was a big part of why the Benefits Agency was keen to automate, but Gaskell said there were problems getting CAPS to interface with Horizon because ICL were having problems getting it to work. At the end of his evidence, Sam Steen, a barrister representing more than 150 sub-postmasters, asked if at any stage the Post Office had expressed how or if they were going to use this new Horizon data when it came to combating fraud.
What was the Post Office saying about their issues with investigations and prosecutions?
I'm not aware there were any, and just from memory, thinking back to the Caps and Card Programme Board, which is where the overarching programme was reviewed by the agency, that was never an issue that came up, that I can recall.
Now, same question, just departing slightly from prosecutions, which I've said so far. The Post Office also deals with its own civil cases in relation to monies that they decide that they should, at that time, seek to recover through the civil courts. Again, what discussions were there from the Post Office as to its needs regarding the use of material from the Horizon system for civil actions?
None that I'm aware of. And I can only just, in order to try and be helpful, when the issues cropped up about incomplete or lost or duplicate transactions, issues like that were never mentioned.
If we can cap this off then, did you ask any questions about it? Well, they weren't mentioned, but did you say, well, what's going on with your side of all of this?
Only insofar as what was the impact of the lost, missing and incomplete transactions, where the suggestions were being made that this could be down to user error by some postmasters. That was where the focus was. Never was it suggested or even mentioned, for instance, that there might be something inappropriate taking place. This was more about whether the system was performing or whether the staff who were operating the system in some post offices were doing it in the right way.
All right. So if we summarise this, then essentially that you don't recall there being any discussions from the post office about the needs of their own systems for investigations, for civil actions or prosecutions?
No, at no stage.
So that was Vincent Gaskell being questioned by Sam Steen.
Thanks, Nick. I think that's nearly us for this episode, but I also wanted to quickly flag up a piece from Carl Flinders at Computer Weekly, who wrote about 2 days' worth of evidence last week from the inquiry's own IT expert, Charles Scipione. So Scipione described some of the practices he observed in his research as disturbing and said that he was troubled by his findings. So if you'd like to understand a little bit more about how badly the IT was developed, you can read Carl's piece.
Yeah, I'll put the link to Carl's piece and a link to the inquiry's main website in the blurb to this episode alongside all the other links. Before we finish, I'd just like to thank everyone who has kindly made a donation to the crowdfunding which powers this podcast. Obviously, it will never cover the number of hours required to stay across this inquiry and the related issues that come up as a result, but it is ensuring that our IT and travel expenses are covered, so we're not actually out of pocket. And the main reason I wanted to say thank you is because it's such a lovely motivating factor, people putting their hands into their pockets in the hope they might see us deliver something worth reading or listening to, does make both Rebecca and I feel genuinely grateful that we've got the opportunity to do this. So thank you.
Yeah, thank you so much. And if you would like to donate, go to postofficescandal.uk/donate.
If, however, you would like something concrete for a small investment, I'm sorry, I can't resist another plug. Please do consider buying all your friends and relatives the new updated paperback version of The Great Post Office Scandal. It's only £13.99 for the paperback plus postage and packing. And I will put the link to buy the book in the blurb as well. It is, though, I know I haven't actually given you your copy, Rebecca, but you have actually had a chance to see it now. And I think hopefully you would agree it's a beautiful book and would make an excellent Christmas stocking filler or doorstop.
It really would. I do actually, I have 2 copies, in fact.
So oh, I could, good.
I can, yeah, your publisher gave me one and then we bought one too.
Oh, bless you.
So I can, yes, I can very much concur. It's a beautiful book.
Excellent.
That's it. Thank you so much for listening. Don't forget to like, subscribe and follow so you can get each new episode for free as soon as it drops.
Investigating the Post Office Scandal is produced and presented by Rebecca Thompson and Nick Wallace with sage advice and support from Whistledown Productions.
We'll be back with another episode very soon.
And we'll see you then. Goodbye.
Bye.